Peter Munk is the founder and chairman of Barrick Gold, the largest pure gold mining corporation in the world. The company is based in Toronto with mining operations spread globally. Munk recently donated $20 million to the University of Toronto, promising future installments to equal $15 million. Sakura Saunders is the editor of the website protestbarrick.net and is an organizer with Munk out of U of T, with the Munk out of U of T campaign. Peter from Worm's Eye View spoke with her yesterday over the phone, and he began by asking her to describe who Peter Munk really is.
So Peter Munk is the founder and chairman of the world's largest gold mining company, Barrick Gold. He's known around Toronto as a philanthropist. He has his name all over the place. He's even gotten the Order of Canada from the Canadian government. But this guy is definitely a shady businessman. If you look at Barrick Gold itself, you know, on the board of directors is former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, Gustavo Cisneros, who's a major media mogul in Venezuela, who was actually implicated in the coup against Hugo Chavez. And also, Barrick started actually as an oil company, and Peter Munk's major business partner was Adnan Khashoggi, who he writes about in his biography. And Adnan Khashoggi is actually a known conduit in the Iran-Contra scandal and a very famous Saudi arms dealer. But perhaps it's from those connections that he was able to get George Bush Sr. to be the chairman of Barrick's International Advisory Board. So, I mean, you can just see through the connections that Peter Munk has. You know, he's been known to praise Pinochet, for example, at some of Barrick's annual general meetings. You can see he's definitely part of that very scary group of global elite that, you know, doesn't mind shaping the world in a way that benefits them. But I think the most problematic thing about the Munk donation and Munk being able to brand the School of Global Affairs is that Barrick Gold actually has a vested interest in global policy. And when I say vested, I mean that they spend millions of dollars trying to influence it. So one example, of course, is recently in Canada with Bill C-300, which is quote-unquote the responsible mining bill. It's actually an extremely weak bill, but a step in the right direction. It basically allows the Canadian government to withdraw investment and diplomatic support for companies that, after an investigation carried out by the Canadian government, has been found to, you know, verifiably commit human rights abuses or extreme environmental degradation and contravention of environmental norms internationally. So this is a fairly weak law, lost by 6 votes, which was very, very disappointing. And Barrick was singled out as the number one company lobbying against it. You know, you can look at Mining Watch. I think they hired something like 7 lobbyists. You know, they were the only ones that didn't participate in the roundtables process, or one of the only mining companies that didn't participate in the roundtables process. You know, in the U.S., you can see they've spent over $600,000 lobbying just in the past year. And then internationally, they've supported all sorts of initiatives that are seen by people who want to see some form of corporate accountability as derailing the process. So they're very invested in this idea of corporate social responsibility, where basically corporations self-regulate and do their own good development work. You know, the mining company becomes responsible for the development of the community and invests their own money and their own supervision in ensuring that the community benefits from the mining operation, which, of course, is just a big PR scandal.
And now, you yourself have been to visit some of the different communities fighting mines, Barrick mines, including in Papua New Guinea. What's happening at Barrick mines right now in Papua New Guinea?
Okay, well, Papua New Guinea actually is a really interesting case study, and this is another kind of incident to reveal a bit of Peter Munk's character. So recently, in February, Human Rights Watch released a report that detailed the gang rapes that have been happening for years by Barrick security near their Porgera mine. You know, of course, it's just a smorgasbord of human rights abuses there. A couple years ago, they burned down an entire hillside of houses adjacent to the mine, which locals say was in order to make way for mine expansion. You know, there's a human rights issue of the villages actually being embedded in between the open pit mine and its expanding waste dumps. So the waste dumps have actually covered all the flat land that they used to grow food on, and they're just constantly having to go up higher in the highlands and live in increasingly squashed living quarters because all of their food and their houses are even falling to landslide, and schools are falling to landslides from all the mine waste. So that's the situation, you know, kind of historically there. They dump the mine waste directly into the river system. I can just go on and on. But very recently, finally, there was some justice. After Human Rights Watch got on this report, you know, Barrick decided to do their own investigation because they knew that, you know, the Human Rights Watch report was going to blow the lid off these gang rapes that have been happening for years. And so Barrick security guards actually got arrested and implicated in these gang rapes through Barrick's own internal investigation. And Peter Monk was recently interviewed in the Globe and Mail, and he actually was quoted saying that it's impossible to regulate his, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 employees in the region, especially in countries where gang rape is a cultural habit. So there he is clearly blaming these gang rapes on the culture of Papua New Guinea. You know, this, after four years, I've hosted people from Papua New Guinea going to the Barrick shareholder meetings, talking about these gang rapes, only to have Barrick Gold say, I can't even believe that you're bringing this up. It's so distasteful that you could even possibly accuse these things. You know, just denial year after year. You know, and then they finally get implicated, and Peter Monk has the gall to say that it's because of their culture. You know, and additionally, something to note is that the Human Rights Watch report specifically says that nobody that they interviewed that was gang raped by anyone other than Barrick Security. All of the gang rapes were by Barrick Security. If you want to talk about culture, let's talk about security guards. And in that case, Barrick doesn't need to monitor their, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 employees. There's only about 400 security guards in Papua New Guinea. And they've been in dire need of some, you know, supervision or, you know, accountability for a long time. Because as I said, you know, the gang rapes is just the tip of the iceberg. Arbitrary detentions, beatings, killings, burning down entire hillside of houses. That was actually done by police. I should make clear that were housed by Barrick Gold, not the security.
And so now their donation at the U of T established the Monk School of Global Affairs. Describe what this facility actually is, or what is it supposed to provide the U of T community?
Okay, well, the donation to the university is supposedly for $35 million. But $15 million of that dollars doesn't get given until, you know, a determination date that is kind of ambiguous, but it could be up to 1 year after Peter Monk dies. And the interesting thing about this $15 million is that at the determination date, whenever that is, it is the sole authority of the donor to decide whether the U of T gets this or not, based on how favorable, you know, he thinks the reviews are, his board thinks the reviews are. It's very, very subjective. The contract makes that very, very clear that it's the sole opinion of the donor. So this is basically, you know, a $15 million carrot on a stick that will ensure that there's plenty of pressure on the administrators of the Monk School and the director of the Monk School to make it conform to Peter Monk's vision of what a School of Global Affairs should be. And, you know, every year, in the agreement, there is scheduled, you know, not only a report to be handed into the, you know, donor, Peter Monk's foundation, but also the director of the school must meet with the donor, you know, every year to discuss, you know, the activities of the school, including the program areas.
So the university won't get the other $15 million unless they... unless their reviews are approved by someone on the Barrick Gold end?
Yes. Well, on the Peter Munk end, and
the Peter Munk
is pretty inseparable from Barrick Gold, since he's the acting chairman and the founder of Barrick Gold. Excuse me, I have to be very precise about the way I talk about Barrick, because they're also known for intimidating academics, journalists, and NGOs with slap suits or strategic lawsuits against public participation. They actually have an active lawsuit against three academics at McGill and a publisher in Quebec. So whenever I do talk about them, I do have to like correct and say the precise facts in the situation. So the Munk contract also makes way for the Munk school to house a right-wing think tank called the CIC. And, you know, it just so happens that not only Barrick, but also Goldcorp executives make up the Senate of this right-wing think tank, basically. So that's another thing that the condition or the contract makes way for. And, of course, the contract allows for the branding of the School of Global Affairs to have Munk's name on it. And, in fact, $2 million of the so-called donation is earmarked just for publicity, just for branding purposes. You know, and so that's definitely not going to the benefit of the university. In fact, as I see it, that $2 million is promoting the university's bad name, right? Because it's promoting the fact that Munk, who is the head of one of the most corrupt, you know, abusive companies worldwide, who, you know, is lobbying against all sorts of international regulation to hold Canadian mining companies accountable, you know, that $2 million is going to promote his name and its attachment to the University of Toronto. You talk about, you know, how much is really going to the University of Toronto. Linda McQuaig and Neil Brooks, they just came out with a book called The Trouble with Billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes over kind of a tax analysis. You know, The Trouble with Billionaires is very much an analysis of this whole idea of philanthropy, of the rich, you know, which like coincides with basically the Canadian government expecting less taxes from the rich, while the rich now are seen as benevolent, giving their money away instead of being required to give it away by the Canadian government. You know, so it kind of is a little bit of like a parallel, I feel like, to CSR, you know, relying on the benevolence of the mining companies and of course, having that completely mess up the power dynamics within my mining impact communities, as opposed to having development be a requirement, you know, something that the community itself is in control of. But anyways, the book, The Trouble with Billionaires, goes over a tax analysis of the Munk donation and finds out that, in fact, Munk will get about $18 million back in taxes, in taxes that he doesn't have to pay. So not only is there a $15 million carrot on a stick, not only is lots of the money going towards what he says it goes towards, which is branding for the school and for his name, but he gets most of that back in taxes that he doesn't have to pay. So definitely it isn't a good deal. The University of Toronto takes about $1.5 billion a year to run. And, you know, Peter Munk gets to ruin the name school, or the name of the school, and use the school to his own narrow interests, you know, at bargain rates.
And so a couple of weeks ago, the U of T campus community, and I know you're a part of this, held an action to protest the donation. What happened at the action?
Okay, well, the action was in front of the Governing Council, which is the highest decision-making body in Toronto, at the University of Toronto. And there's this interesting thing, right? This contract was approved and negotiated without even notifying this body, which supposedly is the highest decision-making body at the University of Toronto. Even months after the donation was approved, the Governing Council still didn't know about it. So we had kind of an inside-outside action at the Governing Council meeting. We had one of the governors, Joita Gupta, she presented a motion basically asking for an annulment and a renegotiation of the Munk contract, and also all sorts of other conditions, so that this could never happen again, this really horrid conflict of interest. We had a protest outside. It was called Making a Mockery of Munk. We wanted to keep the mood a bit, like, sarcastic, but also kind of fun, I guess, just because we wanted to get the counselors on our side. As we saw it, the governing council of the University of Toronto was not our enemy. The executives of the governing council, they were our enemy. They engaged in this extremely shady process, approved this contract without their approval, and didn't even tell them until months after it was approved, and gave them 24 hours to respond to the name change from the Munk Center for International Studies to the Munk School of Global Affairs. So I think it was really successful in that we had a lot of people out there. We passed out a lot of great information. We put together a packet that was like over 20 pages long of just like all the reasons and background resources and primary resources about why this contract should be annulled, including the entire process by which they approved it. We presented the motion on the inside. We actually went in and ended up disrupting the meeting. I did a quick speech on the inside just about having been to Barrack impacted communities and how this donation has implications that are beyond the University of Toronto, that are beyond its name, beyond its reputation. You know, Barrack is clearly using this donation in order to enact their own agenda against or to continue corporate impunity on the world. And, you know, according to Joita, you know, she said that the governing council has definitely reacted favorably to what we've presented, even conservatives on the governing council. And most of them are fairly conservative students. From what I hear, you don't get on the governing council because you care about the governance. You get on the governing council because you care about making corporate connections. And, of course, half the people on the governing council of the University of Toronto are actually representatives of corporations.
And so does it look, are there bright prospects for the future of this push to renegotiate the terms of the donation?
I think that this bodes really well for the future. And in fact, in the past, there has been like donations from Rotman, donations from Peter Munk that have also been really controversial and approved in a very shady process. And through activism on the part of the Faculty Association, those contracts were renegotiated to take out the worst aspects of them. So there's a lot of hope that this contract will be renegotiated. We're hoping for a complete cancellation. And, you know, it'll take a bit of magic for that to happen. But this is a worst case scenario of corporate control of the university. I mean, you could have Barrack give money to the mining school, and it would still be blood money. You know, they should still not take the money. But this is, you know, Munk's foundation giving money to the Munk School of Global Affairs. You know, clearly a blatant conflict of interest. And I hope that the facts are clear enough that even if people are aligned with corporations, that they can see that this has just gone too far.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Sakura.
Thank you very much. And please check out munkofut.wordpress.com to find out more about the campaign. We have a petition up, and we want everyone to sign it. Like I said, this isn't just about the University of Toronto. This is about the globalization of universities in general. This is about corporate impunity worldwide. And so we really want everyone to sign that petition. You can find a link to that petition on monkoutofuft.wordpress.com. We only have like 300 right now. So if everyone listening to this program could sign that petition, that would be amazing.
And that was Sakura Saunders speaking with Peter from Worms Eye View. Sakura is an organizer with Munk Out of U of T campaign and is an editor of protestbarrack.net. If you'd like to sign on to the petition against the U of T donation, you can visit monkoutofuoft.wordpress.com.